Are there persons here this morning that were not with us yesterday evening? Okay. The subject that we discussed yesterday evening connects with the subject we're speaking this morning. The subject from yesterday had to do with chanting. Without upadis. We're going to hear some more. The language is different in this section of Brahma's prayers. But the principle is the same. When chanting the holy name, we know this from Lord Chaitanya's teachings, that within each and every name, Krishna has invested all of his transcendental potencies, which is a lot of potencies. And because of that unlimited potency of Krishna's name, it is said, even just chanting the holy name once, one can be released from all reactions of all past activities and so on and so on. However, just like in the sky, the sun is there, it's daylight, not night, but we can't see the sun because there's clouds in the sky. Similarly, when the holy name arises within the heart, we may not experience the fullness of the potency of Krishna's holy name, because in the sky of our heart there's clouds of offenses, clouds that are arisen because of offenses, aparad. And using Bhaktivinoda Thakur's metaphor or his language, the mist of ignorance, it also blocks the brilliance of the sun. And so there's an ignorance that accompanies misidentification of the self with the coverings. That's what was our topic yesterday. Upadis, in one sense, just, you know, bluntly, it's the designation of body. And then there's gross and subtle. Accepting that that's who we are, instead of who we are. It's false ego, it's misidentification, it's an improper designation of who we are. Because of that, upadi-ness, or misplacing, misdirecting consciousness to what we aren't, when we chant, we don't experience the unlimited potencies of Krishna. It's blocked. So we discussed yesterday evening the importance of, at least while we're chanting Krishna's holy name, we're inviting Krishna, who's so kind, just by vibrating his name, by calling his name, Krishna's there in his fullness, in the form of his holy name. So at least while we're chanting, let go of these upadis, at least strive to let go of these upadis, these designations of the coverings, the clouds and the mist. And when we try to do that, we had a little exercise at the end of yesterday evening's class, chanting, and you know, watch what the mind does instead of going to the holy name. It goes to the upadis. Our process is not a mechanical process. Our process is a devotional process. There's things that we do that may be done mechanically, but they're not going to be effective unless they're done in the mood of devotion, calling to Krishna to go beyond the coverings, going beyond our limitations, our attachments to illusory senses of who we really are. We can go on for millions, according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mahu Kadi Yadi Shravana Kirtana. One can go on for unlimited lifetimes, millions and millions and millions of lifetimes, chanting the holy name, and not get the intended result of chanting the holy name. So we would like to go beyond that limitation. That's why we're here, having a little japa retreat. Bhakti has the power to go beyond. So while chanting, while taking part in the japa retreat, and thereafter, strive to go beyond on the strength of bhakti. The strength of bhakti to access the holy name requires humility. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches that, doesn't he? Although he, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was recognizing Krishna has all of these, he's so kind, he makes himself accessible to anyone, everyone, very easily, without any niyamas, without rules and regulations, just chant. And each and every name has all of his potencies, and he has so many names. Krishna is kind, and Krishna is powerful, Krishna is magnanimous. I know all these things, but I have no attraction. I'm distracted. Dhridaivam idrishi mahajani na naraga. So the very first element in his teachings is humility. So that's the theme. Behind going beyond upadis, there must be humility. Humility is a nice breeding ground for genuine bhakti. We're going to hear these terms in Brahma's prayers. There's a connection between yesterday evening's topic and today's discussion. So here's a nice image of Lord Brahma seated on his lotus flower. And he's our preceptor in the line of disciplic succession. It's supposed to go slowly. There we go. So Brahma is instructing us, or Krishna is instructing us through his dear devotee, Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma's position is so important. There must be super, super, super qualified person to be Lord Brahma. And if there isn't a super qualified person, Krishna comes himself and takes that post. Must be. Is. Very, very qualified and very dear to Krishna. And, through Lord Brahma's prayers, we're being instructed in how to, on the negative side, go beyond our upadis on the positive side to connect with Krishna, to actually see Krishna and understand Krishna. This language in his prayers is very clear, very powerful. He's our original preceptor, so we offer our obeisances unto him, and the members of the disciplic succession, especially our great acharyas who have rendered our teachings, or his teachings, so to add further clarity. Throughout the prayers, we'll go through up to 40 this morning and afternoon. Note especially the mood, which will, if you note the mood, it will help you enter into the mood of humility when chanting, following his mood. We know that Lord Brahma, after this incident of the Brahma Vimohan Leela, the stealing of the calves and the cowherd boys and everything that he experienced, he, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Navadvipa Dham Mahatmya, he went to Navadvipa and performed austerities, and Lord Chaitanya came to see him, showed his form, blessed him, "You'll take part in my pastimes." Brahma asked for a position of humility so he will not become subject to pride again. Lord Chaitanya said, "No problem, I'll take care of that. You'll become Haridas Thakur." And Haridas Thakur is the acharya for the chanting of the holy name in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, none other than Lord Brahma. And another great personality, according to Lord Nrisingadev, there isn't a better example than Prahlad Maharaj of a devotee. And in Prabhupada's purport, he lists the 12 Mahajans, some of whom are incarnations of the Supreme Lord. The best of all of them, example, is Prahlad. And Haridas Thakur is also a partial incarnation of Prahlad Maharaj. So, very important person, very important mood. Please, as we go along, I'll remind you from time to time, because we might get lost in the story and forget the purpose behind the story. It's this mood of humility that Brahma is exhibiting that allows him to receive with eagerness and sincerity Krishna's mercy. And all kinds of things become revealed to Brahma in these prayers. So we'll try to hear them very carefully. The pastime of the Brahma Vimohan Leela begins with chapter 12. And in chapter 12, the pastime begins this way. As every day, friends, they leave early in the morning after being bathed by Mother Jasoda and dressed by Mother Jasoda and nurtured by the love of Mother Jasoda. She's preparing Krishna. This is a painting from a wonderful scene in Brihat Bhagavatamrita where the cowherd boys, they're just eager. They want to. Mother's so attached to her beloved son, Krishna, that she keeps running out and stops him, and she adjusts his garland, and he smiles and says, "Mother Jasoda, I have to go now." He takes a few steps and she runs and makes sure he has enough to eat in his lunch bag. He smiles and says, "I have to go now." You stay by his side all the time because he's mischievous, and you protect him. You're his elder brother. "Yes, Mother Jasoda, we have to go now." She can't bear being separated from Krishna. But eventually, Krishna departs. Can we turn this some light? No, that's for the deities. We can't do that. Okay. Huh? All right. Okay. Whatever we can do is good. Because it's a dark image. No, no, off. More off. More off. That's it. Okay. Okay. Well, anyway, you can't see that so well. Looks really good on my screen. This is Krishna going off to the forest with the cows and the cowherd boys. And the chapter begins with describing what they do. Essentially, Prabhupada says in Krishna book that they're just playing. And because the cows have great affection for Krishna, like the cowherd boys, they just follow wherever the boys go. They're not really hurting the cows, they're just playing. The calves are following them. Very nice painting. There's a peacock. They're imitating the peacocks, imitating the frogs, imitating the birds. Sometimes wrestling. Sometimes, here's a nice painting of, this is taken directly from Amrita. This is Madhu Mangal. He's a Brahmana, friend of Krishna, and Krishna snatched his lunch. And he went running, and Madhu Mangal is running after him, and then Krishna tossed the lunch to another boy, and to another boy, and another boy, and Madhu Mangal starts crying, "You're offending a Brahmana. You're going to get it. You're in big trouble. Give me my lunch." And they laugh and laugh. Just like stop playing. And Krishna sits underneath a tree, and all the cowherd boys crowd around him, hearing Krishna's playing on his mystical flute. And many other descriptions of their playful activities. And then at some point, they're walking along the side of Govardhan Hill. You see Govardhan Hill in the background. And they see something they've never seen today. They see this huge cave right in the middle of the path. So as the boys get closer, "What's this cave? Let's go check it out." And they smell this bad, fishy smell coming out of the cave. And then they start to see these sharp teeth, fangs coming at the top of the cave. And they realize, wait a minute, this isn't a cave. This is a giant. Krishna's always protect us. Let's go inside and see what's inside. So there's the cowherd boys walking right inside Agasura's mouth. There's a very beautiful description that says, Krishna became bewildered by his own yogamaya potency. Because Krishna's an enjoyer. He enjoys all kinds of things, including getting bewildered. He wanted to call out to the cowherd boys, "Don't enter the mouth of Agasura." And his reason was, "You will be unable to bear separation from me even for a moment, but to speak if you enter into the mouth of Agasura." But he didn't call out, bewildered by yogamaya potency, his own potency. And then he withdrew that yogamaya potency. And in fact, he himself entered into the mouth of Agasura, who then closed his big mouth. "I got him. Swallowed Krishna." Krishna exhibited one of his mystic potencies, Mahima Siddhi. He got bigger and bigger and bigger, and Krishna can get really big. So the body of Agasura stretched and stretched, but at a certain point he suffocated, and the spirit soul of Agasura left to the top part of his head. The mouth opened, the cowherd boys walked out. The soul of Agasura went hovering in the air and entered into the Krishna's body. Everybody saw it. He achieved Sayuja Mukti. He merged with the body of Krishna. And the cowherd boys said, "Well done, well done. Let's go have lunch." Prabhupada comments that around 11 o'clock every day, a demon would appear. And Krishna would kill the demon, and That was the signal where it was time for lunch. Because if there wasn't a demon, then they would have just played and played. They would have skipped lunch because they were having so much fun. So, as you see from the painting, while the cowherd boys are having lunch, there's Lord Brahma, who had seen this killing of Agasura. He had gone to Vrindavan to just pay his respects to Krishna, and he saw this pastime. And he became bewildered. What is the extent of the potency of this little boy? Now, he appears just like a little boy. I want to see who he really is. I want to see the extent of his mystical powers. I have so many powers. Let me see what is the extent, the limit of Krishna's mystic powers. So, this idea started coming into his mind. What will Krishna do if I take away the calves and the cowherd boys? He's just a little boy. Is he going to cry? Is he going to come and fall at my feet and say, "Oh, Brahma, please bring back the calves and the cowherd boys. You're so powerful." What is Krishna going to do? He got bewildered. Here's a verse from this 13th chapter. Brahma, who resides in the higher planetary system in the sky, had observed the activities of the most powerful Krishna in killing and delivering Agasura, and he was astonished. Now that same Brahma wanted to show some of his power and see the power of Krishna, who was engaged in his childhood pastimes playing as if with ordinary cowherd boys. Therefore, in Krishna's absence, Brahma took all the boys and calves to another place. Thus he became entangled. For in the very near future, he would see how powerful Krishna was. So, while the cowherd boys were having their lunch, the calves started to wander here and there looking for fresh grass. So what did Brahma do? He kidnapped Krishna's cows and he put them in a cave. And when the cowherd boys noticed, the calves are gone. Their duty is to protect the calves. So they all wanted to go look for the calves, and Krishna said, "No, no. You finish your lunch, I'll find the calves. I'll be back very shortly." So when Krishna went to look for the calves, what did Brahma do? He kidnapped the cowherd boys and he put them in a cave. And then he went back to the scene of the crime. Criminals do that, it said. Wanted to see what Krishna would do now that the calves and the cowherd boys were missing. And when he went back, what did he see? He said all the cowherd boys and all the calves seated together. There's Lord Brahma up on his vimana, his swan carrier. He was bewildered. "I just put the calves and the cowherd boys in the cave." So we went back to the cave. And there they were in the cave. Now he's really bewildered. He went back and again he saw all the calves and the cowherd boys seated there. But then Krishna exhibited his yogamaya potency once again for the benefit of Lord Brahma. And the Bhagavatam chapter 13 describes each one of the cowherd boys and each one of the calves became Vishnu forms. Simultaneously, as you can see from the painting, there's the cows, there's the calves, and each one of them simultaneously manifested Vishnu forms. The boys didn't disappear. Vishnu forms appeared. And, not only that, each of the Vishnu forms were surrounded by all kinds of personalities. Each one. all the opulences of the Supreme Lord, which is a lot of opulence, headed by Anima City, by the mystic potencies headed by Aja, by the 24 elements personified for the creation of the material world, headed by the Mahatattva. And they were all singing his praises, because that's what they do. And then Lord Brahma saw Kala, Swabhava, Sanskara, Kama, Karma, and the Gunas, their own independence being completely subordinate to the potency of the Lord. They had all taken forms and were worshipping each one of these Vishnumurtis. And the personified Vedas were singing the personified the Vedas. What a cacophony of sound vibration. What an amazing display of potency, according to the verse in 13th chapter. Krishna exhibited his Atarkya Nija Mahimani. Tarkya means logic. Like this phrase from Vedanta Sutra, Tarka Apratishta. By logic, one cannot establish the absolute truth. Tarkya, Tarka. So Atarkya means it's illogical or inconceivable, opulence. As we say in the vernacular these days, he was blown away. And then the chapter ends, chapter 13 ends, just as suddenly as those Vishnumurtis appeared with all of those other potencies surrounding them, suddenly they all vanished. They just disappeared. Just going to read how Shukadeva Goswami describes this. Really nice. After seeing this, Lord Brahma hastily got down from his swan carrier, fell like a golden rod, and touched the lotus feet of Lord Krishna with the tips of his four crowns on his heads. Offering his obeisances, he bathed the feet of Krishna with the water from his tears of joy. Go back a couple of verses. By the power of the effulgence of those Vishnumurtis, Lord Brahma, his 11 senses jolted by astonishment and stunned by transcendental bliss, became silent. Just like a clay doll. Lord Brahma was mystified. What is this, he thought. Then he was not even able to see Krishna. Lord Krishna, understanding Brahma's position, then at once removed the curtain of Yogamaya. He had covered Lord Brahma with Brahma's external consciousness, then revived, and he just stood up like a dead man coming back to life, opening his eyes. With great difficulty, he saw the universe along with himself. Whew. Like circuit overload. Then, looking in all directions, Brahma immediately, which were the means of livelihood for the inhabitants and which were equally pleasing in all seasons. So he's stunned. Literally stunned. Bathing the feet of Krishna with his tears of joy. Rising and falling again and again at the lotus feet of Lord Krishna for a long time. Lord Brahma remembered over and over the Lord's greatness he had just seen. And the last verse of the chapter. Then, rising very gradually and wiping his two eyes, of course he had eight eyes, Lord Brahma looked upon Mukunda. Lord Brahma, his head bent low, his mind concentrated and his body trembling, very humbly began with faltering words to praise Lord Krishna. He's in a really humble mood. Stunned, but not fearful. Very joyful, but very, very humble. And he then offers some very, very beautiful prayers. That's the section which the subtitle I've given this is, how are you to know the unknowable? Who possesses unlimited potencies? Well, by humility. This is the title of the morning's presentation. Sweetly flowing within Lord Brahma's prayers. Humility is very powerful. Materialists don't like it. They think it's weak. Devotees understand it's very powerful. Because it's not our power, it's Krishna's power. Let Krishna's power take over or descend upon us. And when Krishna's power descends upon you, there is no limitation at all. So his initial prayers start, we're going to go through 1 through 8. This is how to know the unknowable, possessed of unlimited potencies. So the contrast, because of the light, you can't read all of this so well. What I've done is taken by color coding, matched what the translation says with the words in the Sanskrit. So because you can't see it so well, I'll just have to mainly speak it. The first of his prayers. My dear Lord, you are the only worshipable Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This word, idyate, he has this realization. Krishna is the absolute truth. He's the source. He's already shown it. He's the source of everything. And everything that's the source of other things, Krishna's the source of that too. There may be causes in this world. Behind those causes, Krishna is the cause of those causes. He's the cause of all causes. He's the absolute truth. Therefore, he's worshipable, exactly as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, the first of the Chaturshloki verses. Any one of these verses, we could easily spend a whole class just discussing one verse. We're going to try to cover 12. Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate. Krishna says, I am the source of everything. And when you understand that about Krishna, he's just shown it to Lord Brahma. He's the only worshipable Lord. Idyate. And therefore I offer my humble obeisances and prayers just to please you. Then he enters into this description of Krishna in Vrindavan, because he's in Vrindavan. And that form of Krishna in Vrindavan, Bhagavatam teaches us that's the original form. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. It's very similar, this first of his prayers is very similar to those of you that are familiar with Brahma Samhita, the first three prayers in Brahma Samhita. Brahma describes Krishna's form. Then he describes Krishna's abode. Then he describes Krishna's pastimes, all of which are transcendental, beyond anything material. So he's doing similar here. Krishna's, what he's seeing before him, Krishna in Vrindavan. O son of the king of cowherds, that's this term here. Pashu Pangayaja, Pangajaya, excuse me. He's the son of the king of the cowherds. No, Govinda or Nanda Nandana. Yasoda Nandana. The son of the king of the cowherds. This is Krishna. Govinda. Your transcendental body is dark blue like a new cloud. That's this term up here. Abhra Vapushe. Vapu means form. Vapushe. Your form is of the color or hue like a new rain cloud. And your garment, that's this word, tadit, umbraya. Your form is like a new cloud wrapped in a cloth that's as brilliant as lightning. And the beauty of your face, lasan mukhaya, is enchanted by your gunja earrings. That's this term here. Gunjava tangsa. In Vaikuntha, the contrast is, in Vaikuntha, there's jewels, money. Like, and in Vrindavan, there's chinta money. Everything is not only jewel-like, but is fully conscious. But even the opulence of the gunja berries just grow on trees. But Krishna likes them. He likes them more than he likes jewels. The jewels of Vaikuntha, but to speak of diamonds and other things that people covet. As far as Krishna is concerned, these are more delightful, more enjoyable. So he wears gunja earrings. And just like those of you that have read Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was personally worshipping a Govardhan Shila, one brahmana gave him this gift. And he adored Govardhan like he adored Krishna. He would rub the Shila with his hand, so much so there's a thumbprint in that Shila, which he then gave to Raghunath Das Goswami, along with a garland of gunja berries. He understood the garland of gunja berries meant the mercy of Radharani. The gift from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Raghunath was residence at Govardhan and Radharani's mercy. That's what he understood, and it was true. So Krishna is wearing gunja berry earrings. And to him, they're far more opulent than any jewels in Vaikuntha, or what to speak of heavenly or earthly realm. And then, of course, Krishna is not complete without his peacock feather. And that's this word, paripicha. He has a peacock feather in his head. And he's wearing a garland of forest flowers and leaves. That's this term. Vanya Srajay. Vanya Srajay, the products of the forest. Flowers, forest flowers, forest leaves. That's what Krishna likes. Very natural things from Vrindavan. Because all the trees of Vrindavan, they're wish-fulfilling trees. They supply what everyone wants. What to speak of what Krishna wants. He likes the flowers and leaves from the trees. He's making the trees happy. The trees are making Krishna happy. That's Vrindavan, the land of love. And equipped with a herding stick, a buffalo horn, and a flute. That's these terms here. Vetra, Vishana, and Venu. Venu we know is a flute. But these others, a buffalo horn and a herding stick. This is Krishna's paraphernalia. You know, Lord Vishnu has the four symbols of Vishnu. Krishna has a buffalo horn, a herding stick, and a flute. That's his paraphernalia. For what purpose? For tending the cows. He blows on the buffalo horn to call the cows. He plays upon the flute to enchant the hearts and the minds of every living entity in Vrindavan. Krishna is just this loving personality. He doesn't stand on formality. He just stands on love. And Brahma is realizing this loving nature of Krishna, who is very clearly just exhibited the divinity, that even the Vishnu forms are his expansions. What to speak of the cowherd boys who are expansions of Krishna's energy. So whether it appears to be the Supreme Lord Vishnu or his part and parcel living entities or the objects of this world, they're all coming from Krishna. And what's he doing? That's his decorations. What he's doing is he's standing with unblinking eyes, looking eye to eye at Lord Brahma, holding in his left hand a lump of yogurt and fruit, smiling, saying nothing, because he's already shown him everything. He doesn't have to say anything. You stand beautifully with a morsel of food in your hand. So, this is Krishna's form being glorified in his supreme position of the paraphernalia decorating Krishna, his appearance. And Krishna considers Brahma, why are you worshipping me? You're Lord Brahma. Brahma literally means that you're the greatest, most powerful, most knowledgeable, all-knowing person in the universe. That's you. Why are you offering your obeisances to me? Here's the vision of Chakravarti Thakura. It's very nice. You are the master of all powers in this universe. But I'm only the son of a cowherd man in the forest. You are an ancient and exalted personality, but I'm just a small boy. You are knowledgeable of all the Vedas and endowed with most exemplary conduct, but I'm an ignorant keeper of cows. Not even gone to school. and so unaware of proper conduct that I run around with some yogurt and rice in my hand. You are the Supreme Lord, full of bliss and the controller of illusion. But I am bewildered by your illusion, wandering about the forest, grieving over lost calves. Thus I am not qualified for your praise. So, he then, Brahma, responds with the following verse. Yeah. My dear Lord, neither I nor anyone else can estimate the potency of this transcendental body of yours, which has shown such mercy to me, and which appears just to fulfill the desires of your pure devotees. They're very important. Krishna is manifesting to Lord Brahma because Lord Brahma is very dear to him. Residents of Vrindavan, they're seeing Krishna all the time. They're seeing Krishna all the time. It's like what the gopis say about Krishna. What great austerities has these, Shukadev Goswami says, what great austerities these cowherd boys have done, that they're with Krishna all day long. But it's not just austerities, it's the intensity of their love. Because of their intensity of their love, Krishna shows himself, and not just shows himself like with Lord Brahma, and then he's, you know, he doesn't have that association any longer. They're in his constant association. So why does Krishna appear? Out of love for his devotees. So what about our chanting? Back to our purpose of our get together here. We're chanting, but we're not going to feel Krishna's presence or to speak of anything else. We can go on for many years, many lifetimes, and not enter more deeply into the medium of associating with Krishna through his holy name, unless there's some eagerness, some genuine love. And he's so lovable. He's all attracted, but we're distracted. We're distracted by our upadis and our identifications with what we're not. We don't want to be there, but we're there. So, if Krishna shows his mercy, and only when Krishna shows his mercy, then we can go beyond those things. For Krishna to show his mercy, he wants to see. You'll hear. Krishna wants to see our intention. And sustained effort, our sincere, serious effort to be with him, to be conscious of him, to be in our relationship with him. Then he goes on, although my mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, I cannot understand your all spiritual personal form. This word here, it's too dark. Bhuta Maya. Krishna's form is all spiritual. Krishna's name is all spiritual. Krishna's activities are all spiritual. For Lord Brahma, whose mind is completely withdrawn from material affairs, and he's seeing the form of Krishna, he can't understand the form of Krishna. Although he's just seen all this exhibition of the divinity of Krishna's form, because Krishna's form has manifested all these amazing things that we heard at the beginning. So what to speak of us? We're identifying with what we're not. Where our minds are absorbed in material affairs. And even our devotional service is mixed with our identification with the body rather than identification with the spiritual conception, like we heard about the upadhis yesterday evening, that Bhuta Shuddhi prayers. You call that? To establish a spiritual conception of who we are in relation to Krishna. We're Krishna's. We're Krishna's eternal servant. We're not these other things. We have to hear it again and again and repeat it again and strive again and again and still not be successful and call for Krishna's mercy again and again. And when Krishna sees we really mean it, he can withdraw that deluding potency and show himself. Just like opening the curtain. Opening the curtain, you can see the deity. Behind the curtain, when the deity is closed, you don't see the deity. That's like our position. Brahma says he can't understand his all-spiritual form. Then, how could I possibly understand the happiness you experience within yourself? This very beautiful description by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. It's not just Krishna's experiencing happiness within himself. There's all these devotees that are experiencing the happiness of being with Krishna. Who can understand the happiness of being with Krishna? And the cowherd boys and the gopis and the cows and the residents of Vrindavan. It's spectacular. How is it possible we can understand that without Krishna's mercy? And Krishna shows his mercy to one who wants his mercy. Instead of wanting fruit of activities or the sense of doership, even when we're doing our duties in devotional service, that mix has to leave. We have to want that mix to leave for it to leave. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur expresses, Krishna's listening to Brahma very patiently and replies, but to fulfill desires and show mercy are traits of human beings also. Why are you treating me so special? Because you are special. Because your qualities and your form and everything about you are fully spiritual. The very essence of the 10 offenses, Jiva Goswami explains, and you just analyze and it's really easy to understand. The essence of the offenses, 10 in number, is to see that which is spiritual as not spiritual. And it, you know, go through the list. I invite you to do that. Starting with, you know, the devotees of the Lord, etc. The scriptures, the name, the process of devotional service, see it as material. That which isn't material. We're blocked by our contaminated consciousness. The mists of ignorance and the clouds of anartas. And they stay with us. It's not just in this lifetime. It's who knows how many lifetimes. Countless number of lifetimes covered. Struggling and struggling and struggling. Now we have this very special opportunity. Let us understand the opportunity. Use it very attentively and sincerely and repeatedly. Brahma, his mood is to say to Krishna, I desire to examine the extent of your potency. I desire to understand how you will react to my showing my power. In turn, you have shown me such mercy by giving me a glimpse of who you actually are. So may that happen to us when we chant our 64 rounds tomorrow. A glimpse of who Krishna actually is. Now, is it possible? We're very tiny. We're very insignificant. And Krishna is unlimited. How can one estimate something that's unlimited, which can produce unlimited entities, each one having unlimited potencies? We don't have the capacity. So, by the process of our own power of speculation, it's not going to be possible. And that's the next two verses. By the process of gyan, or mental speculation, give it up. Some of you know this verse, because it's a very famous verse. Gyane prayasam udapasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam stane statakshurtikatam tanavan manobhir ye prayasojita jitopyasichas ilokyam. Translation. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the process of speculative knowledge and with their body, words and mind offer all respects to the description of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to these narrations, which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees. Certainly conquer your lordship, although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. Very famous verse. It was the verse which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted when he had his conversation with Ramananda Roy. The question of Lord Chaitanya, where their conversation began, is what's the goal of life and how to achieve it? Pretty interesting. During some period of my brahmacharya life, Rupanuga Prabhu, Prabhupada disciple, then GBC member, he liked very much college preaching. In fact, I was a product of one of his college preaching efforts. He was sent by Srila Prabhupada to start a small center at a University of New York in Buffalo. And from that University of New York in Buffalo, by Krishna's arrangement, something like 30 devotees came from that one program. And I'll just recite some of the names so you get an idea. Burijan Prabhu, Gunagrai Maharaj, Praladananda Maharaj, Bibi Govinda Maharaj, Trivikram Maharaj, myself, Tejas, who started preaching in India, and his wife, Jagadish Prabhu, Lakshmi Moni Prabhu, Bhagavan Prabhu and his wife, Naratama Nanda, who became the head pujari in Bombay, Satya Narayan, who is a BBT trustee for Eastern, whatever it is, Southeast Asia, and a whole bunch of others I'm sure I'm just not remembering right now. It was a very powerful program. He loved college preaching. So after he left Buffalo, Prabhupada brought him to New York. So he was in charge of the center in New York. So I would go with him on occasion for classroom programs at colleges. He just had this liking for college outreach. So it's a little break from Brahma's prayers, but it's just... you'll see the connection. Rupanuga was naturally bald. He looked like a movie star. Yul Brynner, very tall, stood very straight, looked very serious, an intense personality. And he would go into the classroom. The kids are all seated there. He wouldn't say a word. He was like a mystic. He set up like a cloth on the floor, a picture of, Krishna sitting, and then he would take a bell, or he lights some incense, didn't say a word. Light some incense, ring a bell, make the offering, sit down, sit straight, look at them and say his first words, like, what's he going to say? His first words were, what's the highest truth you know? That's how he began. It was pretty powerful. Of course, the times were different then than now, but I wouldn't imitate that today. I don't recommend anyone imitates that today. But it was amazing. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his conversation Ramarandarohit. Let's talk about that. So he offered five things, each one of them one after the next, including some of our favorite verses from Bhagavad Gita, like Sarva Dharmam Parityaja Mamekam Shno. Let's go beyond that. And so on. The one that he accepted is this one. And the way that Ramananda Roy described it is pure devotional service without any touch of speculative knowledge, going beyond jnana. That's this verse. Jnane prayasam. Prayasa means endeavor. Jnane prayasam. Udapasya. Rejecting completely this endeavor for speculative knowledge. And san bukaritam bhavadiya varatam. Using your body, mind, and words in service to Krishna. Stane statak, stay in your position. So if you're going to stay in your position, there's a risk because you have affinity for enjoying matter. You stay in your position. You have a liking for this or that. So how to let go of the liking for this or that while you're staying in your position? Becoming attached to Krishna. And by becoming attached to Krishna, the upadis, the coverings, are dismissed. If you remember from yesterday, those that were with us, that Prabhupada explained from the fourth canto, this how the upadis work. It's like an object being reflected in water or oil or a mirror. But you remove the medium and then it's just the object, not just a reflection of the object. And so one who is on the topmost platform of devotion, the object ultimately is Krishna. They just see Krishna. Continue, this is the same topic continuing. In the Hamsa avatar, there's a form of the Lord who took the form of a swan. And you see he's instructing Brahma and the four Kumaras. And within his teachings, there's this teaching that says, if we don't see the factual relationship between matter and Krishna, we're not seeing accurately. Stane statak. Stay in your position. You utilize your senses with the objects of the senses. That's bhakti. It's not withdraw the senses. You extend your senses in the field of the material energy in service to Krishna. So if you don't see the connection between matter and Krishna, you're going to be covered by maya, or softer. You won't see things as they actually are. You certainly won't see Krishna. You'll see an opportunity for sense enjoyment. Bhakti is the potency, the power that permits us to see Krishna and things in relation to Krishna. Remember that image of a tree and Prabhupada staying on the platform of bhakti? One doesn't see the tree, you see Krishna. Well, you certainly see the tree. Here's how Ramananda Roy, that discussion is explained. The Mahabhagavata, that's Ramananda Roy and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, where they're having their conversation. The Mahabhagavata, the advanced devotee, certainly sees everything, mobile and immobile. But he does not exactly see their forms. Rather, everywhere he immediately sees manifest the form of the Supreme Lord. Now, what does that mean? We'll probably not know what it means until we become of that standard. That is to say, attachment for Krishna. And how are we going to get there? Answer, the holy name. When you're chanting the holy name, don't be multi-processing what your day is going to be or whatever all the other things that the mind goes to. Just do one thing. Associate with Krishna. Because that's all that's going on anyways. You're chanting and hearing the sound vibration, the form of Krishna as his holy name, Nama Prabhu. If you do that properly, then when you're doing your activities of the day, your duties, which are, they can be in the category of upadis, you'll just see Krishna, opportunity for service to Krishna. Especially this eighth prayer, we're only into prayer number 3. The hands of the clock keep moving, so I'm going to have to move along with the hands of the clock. But these are prayers that can instruct us, if we hear them properly, they can strike the heart in such a way we can go beyond being dull. And we can become Krishna conscious through the medium of chanting and Krishna conscious in all of our daily activities, the goal of life and the means to achieve it. Later on in these prayers, there's a very nice description. It comes to what is in response to what Brahma is saying about how much happiness you're feeling, what to speak of the residents of Vrindavan. Later in this chapter, Brahma says, "You have already arranged to give yourself to Putana and her family members." So, Putana had 2 brothers, Bakka and Agha. Those aren't even nice names, Agha. So, Aghasura. And Bakka. Elsewhere in the 3rd canto, Uddhava refers to Putan as Baki, because she's the sister of Bakka. Baki. So Krishna gave himself to Baki or Putana and Bakasura and Agasura. How? He entered into their mouth. He touched his body to the contaminated parts of their body and purified them. We'll see that in just a moment. So as Krishna gave himself, his transcendental, spiritual, Vrindavan, original personality, Godhead form, directly contacting them, he purified them. What's he going to do for the residents of Vrindavan? What's left? That's Brahma's amazement. Krishna, you're unlimitedly merciful. What kind of mercy are you going to give to the residents of Vrindavan? He's realizing Krishna's nature, and he's realizing the love of the residents of Vrindavan, and what are you going to do to reciprocate with them? Here's a nice painting showing Krishna allowed Bakasura with his big beak. Krishna allowed himself to enter the beak of Bakka. But Krishna also arranged that Bakka couldn't swallow him. He just got in his beak and purified him. And then he bifurcated his beak and he gave up his body. And with Agasura, Krishna entered within the body, the mouth and the body of Agasura. Krishna gave himself. This is a verse from that chapter 13, when Krishna entered the mouth of Agasura, the demigods hidden behind the clouds exclaimed, "Alas, alas!" But the friends of Agasura, like Kamsa and other demons, were jubilant. But then, after purifying Agasura, Krishna liberated him. "You're so kind to these persons. What are you going to do for your devotees?" One of my favorite paintings is this. Just see the love of Mother Jasoda. We know the love of a mother for the child. What to speak of the child is the personality of Godhead, and the mother is his own Shakti Tattva. And here comes Krishna. After being away for the whole day, Mother Jasoda extending her arms, Krishna extending his arms, big smile. Nanda Maharaj standing by her side, waiting back here, the young gopis with their offerings for Krishna. Krishna's cowherd boyfriend just having all their fun, having been playing with Krishna all day long. Standing next to Krishna is one calf. Like this, all the five rasas are in this one painting. This is Krishna in Vrindavan. How are you going to reciprocate? He's going to reciprocate with loving feelings. Not just entering into their mouth or touching them. And what to speak of the gopis? Just by his sidelong glance, which then enters into the eyes of the gopis, from the eyes of the gopis into the hearts of the gopis. There's this beautiful expression when Krishna is entering into Dwarka. The ladies are up on the rooftops because they're shy. And they're seeing Krishna. So Krishna reciprocates with their love just by glancing at them. And the description is, Shukadeva Goswami or Sutta says, by seeing Krishna, Krishna enters into their eyes, Krishna enters into their hearts, and their heart of hearts, they're embracing Krishna, being as fully satisfied as if they were embracing Krishna with their arms, from their hearts. So what to speak of the residents of Vrindavan when Krishna gives his sidelong glance? His glance is very powerful. Very powerful. We know this from many things. Brahma Samhita, with any one of his limbs, he can do anything any one of his other limbs can do. He's all powerful. Radharani is in the center here. She has her crown on. This loving exchange, that's why Krishna appears in Vrindavan, because of the kind of love the residents of Vrindavan have. The way that Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur ends this, his commentary on this verse, he actually starts with this. There's a verse from Svetashvatara Upanishad which states, Tam eva viditva, which means freedom is possible only by understanding Brahman. Freedom is only possible understanding Brahman. Well, what if somebody is ignorant? And this verse is an answer to that question. By bhakti. You don't have to be learned. You can be learned or not learned. You can be any situation. Just love Krishna, that's all. Engage in Krishna's service with the intent of pleasing Krishna. Whatever your position, better to be a sincere sweeper of the street for Krishna than a charlatan meditator. Just chant. This is painting showing Sanatana Goswami chanting. So just chant with real devotion, and what will appear in your heart will be Krishna. You're chanting with that sincere method. By the process of hearing, we develop such a loving trusted relationship with Krishna, that he will say, I am like this. You wanted to see me as I am. You wanted to serve me. Such a deep desire for so long. And I have tested you so many times. And you chose only me. Now here I am. That's what he's done with Brahma. Brahma wanted to see, so he showed. Bhakti is the means of going beyond the upadhis, the designations of coverings and sense of who we are and all that illusory stuff. So now, the next verse goes on. After this Gyane Prayasam Udapashya Namanta Eva, he's going to say something more about this bhakti process compared to the Gyana process. Text number 4. Shreya Shritim Bhaktim. My dear Lord, devotional service unto you is the best path for self-realization. Udashyate vibho klishyanti. If someone gives up that path and engages in the cultivation of speculative knowledge, he will simply undergo a troublesome process. That's this klishyanti. And will not achieve his desired result. As a person who beats an empty husk of wheat cannot get grain, one who simply speculates cannot achieve self-realization. His only gain is trouble. Now, Prabhupada has said this over and over again without necessarily referring to the verse, but the verse is so beautiful. There's the bhakti process. It's mentioning both. The bhakti process and the jnana process. The bhakti process is being described as the shreya Shritim. Shreya means the best. The very best of all processes is bhakti. And udasya, if someone gives that up, what do they get? Klesha. Misery. And a troublesome process without any kevala bodha labhyate. That's their attainment. So some image, here's some grain that has inside the grain of rice or the grain of wheat. But what happens if the grain is gone? Then it's just the empty husk. So what's the use of thrashing the empty husk? Well, the only thing you get is trouble. And misery. But no labhyate, no real benefit. This speculative process is like that. So it's the compare and contrast thing again. So now that he has described both comparing and contrasting of these processes, he's going to go more deeply into the bhakti process that begins with this humility and desire to be engaged in service. The translation reads, O Almighty Lord, in the past, many yogis in this world achieved the platform of devotional service by offering all their endeavors unto you and faithfully carrying out their prescribed duties. Through such devotional service perfected by the process of hearing and chanting about you, they came to understand you, O Infallible One, and could easily surrender to you and achieve your supreme abode. So just something quickly about this verse is there's two ways of reading it. Something very similar to what Kapila Dev describes to Devahuti, the process of meditation, which is the means of perfection in Satya Yuga, is meant to bring one to bhakti. Even dhyan or meditation is meant to bring one to bhakti. It's not that you have to give up meditation. You meditate on the position of being Krishna's servant and contemplating how to serve him nicely and carrying out those activities. Not just dhyan, meditation. Then in that way it matures into devotional service. And it's perfected, very important. Kato panitaya, this term here. It's perfected by the process of hearing and chanting. Emphasis in the whole of the Bhagavatam is hearing and chanting. That's the devotional service begins with hearing and chanting. The beginning, the middle, and the end. Process becomes perfected that way. And by that hearing and chanting, the inspiration to serve, the clarity about who Krishna is and why we should want to serve him, strengthening our desire to want to serve him, and then Krishna discloses himself. Verse number 6. Non-devotees, however, cannot realize you in your full personal feature. Nevertheless, it may be possible for them to realize your expansion as the impersonal supreme by cultivating direct perception of the self within the heart. But they can do this only by purifying their mind and senses of all conceptions of material distinctions and attachment to material sense objects. I purposely underlined this part, this term up here, avikriyat, and highlighted it down at the bottom because it's very similar to the upadhi notion or concept. Conceptions of material distinctions. Upadhi. Accepting that the designation of body and mind as who we are. So, even in the impersonal process, you have to do that. Say it the other way. You can't achieve impersonal realization, Brahman realization, holding on to upadhis or the sense, the conception of material distinctions. You cannot. You have to go beyond that. So devotees have to go beyond that. The impersonals have to go beyond that. A transcendentalist has to go beyond that. And we're meant to go beyond that. We have our body. We have to do something with it. We have to use it in Krishna's service. When we do the things that we do in Krishna's service, we don't identify with the body. At least we're instructed to not identify. We're doing service. The body is an instrument of service. The senses, the mind, the limbs, our abilities, this thing given to Krishna, by Krishna to us, that we use for his service. But it's not who we are. It's too easy. We're so conditioned. It's too easy to forget the purpose behind the activity. We become attached to the activity. Just like someone was describing yesterday of, while chanting, I was thinking of, you know, an act of compassion for a friend of mine and what can I do to help this friend of mine. And the activity of compassion is very nice. It's very easy to do activities of compassion or anything, forgetting Krishna, and think it's nice. So how do we get beyond that? It starts with chanting properly. Chanting where we're attentive to Krishna. That's the challenge. Tomorrow morning when you start your 64 rounds, I challenge you. Go beyond thinking about all your duties and think just be attentive to Krishna. The mind is going to want to go to those things because we're attached to those things. We identify fully with those things. We're covered by those things. But even the impersonalist has to go beyond those things. And all attachment to material sense objects. Arupito, that word here. That's the tan mukaritam bhavati avartan. Sarvapadi vinirbuktam tat paratvena nirmalam. Tat paratvena nirmalam. The senses also need purification. That's available to us through the process of bhakti. What do the impersonalists do to purify their senses? They just get themselves in a straitjacket and blindfolded with a gag in their mouth. Shut down the senses. Doesn't purify the senses. The desire still remains. That isn't an effective means. Effective means is you purify the senses. There's risk. Repeating myself. There's risk when you extend your senses into the field of the material energy. Because there's tendencies to be the enjoyer of the field of the material energy. What's the protection? Bhakti. Bhakti can dissolve all of that. That's our hope. That's our necessity. And the best means of increasing bhakti starts with hearing and chanting. It's interesting, it's cold out and they got the air conditioner on. I don't know if you can feel the cold air, but it's cold air. You're shutting it off? Huh? It is cold. It's not getting cold. I guess, anyway, Hare Krishna. So you see the connection, right, in Brahma's prayers? So that's the necessity. Krishna is very kind. Krishna can disclose his impersonal feature to even someone who's not a devotee. There's still the pre-requirement or prerequisite. And they may, as the phrase goes here, svanu bhavad. That's this term here, svanu bhavad, which has been translated as cultivating direct perception of the self with a capital S within the heart. So the process of meditation on supersoul may end up in impersonal absorption. If there's aversion to the personal feature of the Supreme, what's the solution? Associate with devotees and understand, for example, from Lord Brahma, the very personal nature of Krishna. His form is not material. His affection is not material. His affection and exchanges with the residents of Vrindavan is not material. Although worldly people may think like that and maybe even imitate what Krishna does. We're almost done with his prayers. Whoops. Text number 7. In time, far out verse, learned philosophers or scientists might be able to count the atoms of the earth, the particles of snow, or perhaps even the shining molecules radiating from the sun, the stars, and other luminaries. But among these learned men, who could possibly count the unlimited transcendental qualities possessed by you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who have descended onto the surface of the earth for the benefit of all living entities? Somebody was pointing out to me last time I visited in Seattle, riding from the airport, going back to their home, and over there it's Mount Hood, right? You can see from the road? Rainier, okay. So they just kind of, in the course of discussion, said they've done some statistic of how many tons of snow falls on Mount Rainier per year. I was thinking of this verse. How many particles of snow is that? And that's just Mount Rainier. What to speak of all the particles of snow on the Earth planet? It's Supposing someone could count that. What Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Lord Sankarshan, he can do that. He's not a jiva. He's an unlimited personality. He's a direct expansion of the Supreme Lord. He can count particles of snow or all the particles of light in the sun and all the luminaries in the universe. But he can't find the limit of Krishna's qualities. The living entity cannot do that. The greatness of Krishna is overwhelming. But his kindness is one of his qualities. And his kindness is also overwhelming. And by his kindness, he descends on earth to give benefit to all living entities, what to speak of his devotees. This is a nice painting of Uddhava, shown with a beard, I don't know why. Because he was older than Krishna, but about the same age. So this is a section of that verse from third canto where he says, who can be a better master than Krishna? That's that Aho Bhakti verse where to Putana, Krishna is such a master that all Putana came with the purpose of killing Krishna, but there was also this little idea of maternal affection to give her breast to Krishna as a small child. So Krishna reciprocated with that and gave her a position of in Goloka Vrindavan as an assistant to Mother Jasoda, eternally engaged in her loving service. How shall I take shelter of one more merciful? And Uddhava was not only a dear devotee of Krishna, but fantastically learned and wise. We'll just take it from Uddhava. There isn't a better master than Krishna. So here Brahma is declaring, Krishna, you have unlimited qualities, and each of those qualities is expandable to an unlimited degree. It's all inconceivable. So how are the impersonalists going to realize these qualities? They can't. So just to amplify this, how are you going to think of something that's unlimited? Like, how are you going to think of infinity? You can't. Well, that's the definition, but in the mind, can you think of something that's unlimited? You can't. What's something that's unlimitedly beautiful? How beautiful is that? Or something that's unlimitedly attractive or unlimitedly compassionate. What is that? Well, how can you even think of it? Well, that's what Brahma is saying about Krishna. He has all these unlimited qualities unlimitedly, and they expand themselves unlimitedly, and through them Krishna does unlimited things. So now the final verse in these initial prayers, we're already at 9:25. Brahma wants to speak about Krishna's bodhi. So here we go. My dear Lord, this is a very famous verse. It appears in Bhagavad Gita purport. Tatenu kampam susamikshamano. My dear Lord, one who earnestly waits for you to bestow your causeless mercy upon him, the reactions of his past misdeeds, and offering you respectful obeisances with his heart, words, and body, is surely eligible for liberation, for it has become his rightful claim. Very important verse. Whenever you feel beaten up by the material energy, something bang you over the head and your nice verse to remember. Say it again and again in the mood of Lord Brahma. So this is describing three important internal cultivations in the bhakti process. So listen carefully. The first one is this susamikshamano, is expecting Krishna's mercy. Circumstances of life can be sometimes this and sometimes that. There's duality here. But we should know that behind those circumstances of life, there's Krishna. And Krishna is unlimitedly merciful. So this or that, the teaching that Brahma is giving, the internal cultivation of bhakti, is to expect Krishna's mercy. I'm going to read something from Nectar Devotion about that in just a moment. It's especially difficult when there is some calamity to expect Krishna's mercy in the midst of a calamity. It's actually different, but also challenging to expect Krishna's mercy, because we may take, if things are going fortunate, we may just take shelter of the fortune and not take shelter of Krishna. And that's not really what Krishna's mercy is, that things are going, you know, very well. Not at all necessary that things are going. The subterranean hellish planets, there's a planet where the opulence is greater than heaven. The duration of life seems to be greater than heaven. People live where their bodies don't get old. It sounds like that's pretty nice. But the reality is, at a certain point, here comes the guillotine. Life terminates. So the lulling of, it's like, you know, the animal, Prabhupada gives this example, the animal that's chewing his grass or chewing his cud, and he's in the slaughterhouse. He's thinking everything is nice. Not nice. And the very nature of the material existence, it's all temporal. Whatever it is that we think is nice, it's going to be taken. And when it's taken, it's not nice. Because we attach to the thing that seems to bring us happiness. And then it's gone. It's Maya. It's a trick of Maya. So the internal cultivation of bhakti is in all circumstances, good, bad, or mix, or fortunate, good fortune, ill fortune, any circumstance of life, rely upon, depend upon, wait earnestly for Krishna to bestow his causeless mercy. This susamikshamano, very important, is the sincerity and the earnestness with which we sustain that expectation. That's what Krishna sees. Then a little paraphrasing, that's what Krishna saw within Brahma. That's what Krishna is looking to see within us. Here's Prabhupada's way of describing this from a lecture that I liked it so much, I heard it again and again. We pray to Krishna, "My dear Lord Krishna, I simply want to be engaged in your eternal loving service. Please engage me." That's our Maha Mantra. Prabhupada explained, Krishna hears that prayer and says, "Oh, are you sure? What if there's a little sense gratification? And Krishna sends him sense gratification. And sense gratification comes rolling at the devotee's feet. Please take me, please take me. And the devotee says, no, I only want Krishna. Then Krishna considers, oh, maybe he really wants me. What about a calamity? Are you sure you really want me? And the devotee sees the calamity and says, I don't mind the calamity, I just want Krishna. He really wants me. All right, I'll give myself to him. Same as what Maharaj Ambarish, what Lord Vishnu says to Durvasa Muni about Maharaj Ambarish, devotees like him, they've given their heart to me. And so I've given my heart to them. They know nothing but me, and I know nothing but them. I've given myself fully unto them. Krishna gives himself fully unto such a devotee who doesn't want this or that, aversion to that and favoring this. They just want Krishna. That's sincerity. This earnestly or sincerely, susamiksha mano, not generated by circumstance. Consider, just saying the same point in a different way, everyone has their breaking point, generally. It can be nice up to a certain point, and at a certain point you lose being nice. Something, you know, irritates you, and you know, so being nice can be circumstantial. Or being surrendered to Krishna can be circumstantial. Is there a breaking point to your circumstantial surrendering to Krishna? For such a devotee as the who is internally cultivated, we get different tests. Earnestly, sincerely, don't waver from that. That's an internal cultivation. Awaiting Krishna to bestow his causeless mercy, anukampam. And then the second one is bhujana evatma kritam vipakam, and that is atma kritam is taking responsibility for the reaction that we're receiving. In Brahma's case, he knows he's going to get a big reaction because he did a big no-no. Now, in one sense, it's not a terrible no-no because he didn't kill the cow or harm them. He just put them in a cave. But the offense is Krishna's enjoying pastimes in Vrindavan with the cowherd boys and the cows, and he's interrupting that so he can, you know, see what Krishna's going to do. It's not just nonsense. It's an offense. This is Krishna's intimate pastime. What's he doing? So he's going to get a reaction. He gets a reaction. But he's not appealing to become free from reaction or blaming Krishna for the reaction. Here's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says. It's very nice. Oh, we're going to get to that in just a moment. Yeah. I'll get there. And the third is Rita Vag Vapubir Vididhan Namaste. Offering respectful obeisances always. Not only with your body and your words, with your heart. Always offering respectful obeisances unto the personality of Godhead. That's an internal cultivation. So this is an image showing our fate may be seen inside a crystal ball. I don't know how they do it. Maybe it's hocus pocus. But some persons can, you know, what's my destiny? Let me look inside the crystal ball. Oh, I see. Da 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 da. So, our fate is something that's It's going to come our way. And sometimes people think that this, the hand of fate is something evil. But, you know, we're the evil. We've created our own destiny. Here's a situation. This is a painting of Prithu and his good wife. And the situation is, there's a verse that I'm going to refer to where Prithu has performed some sacrifice to Lord Vishnu, and so much appreciating his sacrifice, Lord Vishnu has come. Of course, Prithu is an incarnation of the Supreme Lord, but the Supreme Lord has come. And he's offering this prayer, Yata Charad Balahitam Pita Svayam, which means, as a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son. Please bestow upon me whatever you think is best for me. Isn't that nice? It's very similar, a little different, but a little similar. When Prahlad Maharaj is standing before Lord Nrisingadev, he understands Lord Nrisingadev wants to offer him a benediction. And he's saying, no, no, no. In this case, Prithu is saying, you're my father. And like a father, doesn't wait for the child to say, this is what. So whatever you feel is best for me, please give me that. So that's what happens. One example of that is King Chitraketu, where King Chitraketu, pictured here, is visiting his friend Lord Shiva. Parvati misunderstands the words of King Chitraketu, and she curses him. And King discussed yesterday evening, if you remember the Narayana Parayana verse, the circumstance doesn't change his position. His mind is completely absorbed. His consciousness, his heart, his words, everything completely absorbed in Narayana, or the personality of Godhead. In his case specifically, Lord Sankarshan. So he's unfazed, expecting the Lord's mercy, and the Lord's mercy comes in the form of Parvati's curse that you become a demon. Okay. Somehow this is the Lord's mercy. And it was the Lord's mercy. He went back to Godhead in that very next life. The Lord's mercy. Or Indra, having offended Krishna. What a big offense he made. Wanted to kill the Vrijvasis and cows with his torrents of rain. Big temper tantrum. So Krishna gave him his mercy anyways. Krishna gave his mercy by the whole pastime of removing his pride. Because it's his pride that's the cause of those things that he does. Krishna is very kind. Krishna removes the pride of his devotee. Now I'm going to read a little section. We're almost done. I'm going way past my time. Sorry about that. There's a passage in chapter 10 of Nectar Devotion. It's techniques of hearing and remembering, where Prabhupada refers, he quotes this verse, 10th canto, chapter 14, text number 8, gives the translation. This statement of Srimad Bhagavatam should be the guide of all devotees. A devotee should not expect immediate relief from the reaction of his past misdeeds. No conditioned soul is free from such reactionary experiences, because material existence means continued suffering or enjoying of past activities. If one has finished his material activities, then there is no more birth. This is possible only when one begins Krishna conscious activities, because such activities do not produce reaction. Therefore, as soon as one becomes perfect in Krishna consciousness, he is not going to take birth again in this material world. A devotee who is not perfectly freed from the resultant actions should therefore continue to act in Krishna consciousness seriously. That's the susamikshamano. Expecting Krishna's mercy. Susamikshamano. Jiva Goswami makes a comment on this as well. This particular verse where Jiva Goswami's message is the essence is this taking ownership. We're responsible for our actions. And whatever those actions are, good, bad, and mixed, they're coming, and take responsibility for them. We don't hold the instrument of our karma responsible. We hold ourselves responsible. That, you know, that's you operate from the platform of the heart, not the platform of controlling things and blaming things because they're interfering with my controlling plan. We're responsible for whatever comes our way. And the bhakti principle, this is from his Bhakti Sandarbha, he refers to this verse, that one continues to operate from the platform of devotion in all circumstances. That's possible when you're humble, and it's also possible when the devotee who's humble stays in that position, not created or destroyed by circumstances. Ahoituki apratiyata. Right? Yatma supersedati. So I want to just refer to one other thing. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Oh, I know what it is. Yeah. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, just and I promise you I'll end. It's so nice. So instructive, so beneficial. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes as follows. Brahma has now rejected the other processes, jnana, etc. And he's accepted bhakti as the means of deliverance and achieving perfection. Now he's facing the realities of living in this world. A devotee understands that the happiness and distress he undergoes due to performing bhakti and committing aparads are a special mercy from the Lord. It is like the father who sometimes has his child drink milk and sometimes has him drink bitter neem juice. So the child may think, yeah, neem juice, where's the milk? But the father knows what's best for the child. Maybe there's some illness and he needs the neem juice. Sometimes the father embraces, sometimes the father reprimands his child. The devotee accepts whatever happens to him as an arrangement of the Lord acting for his benefit. The devotee thinks, the Lord certainly knows what is best for me, even if I don't know. Karma and time have no effect on a devotee, so this is Krishna's personal arrangement for me. Out of his mercy, Krishna sometimes gives me happiness and sometimes gives me distress, considering how to engage me in his service. Very nice. I'll just share something anecdotal that happened very recently. I was traveling with Southwest Airlines, and they train their people. They select the employees on the basis that they are friendly. So they like promoting themselves that way. And pretty much I've seen that's their culture. They're friendly people, you know, the airline employees, the steward and stewardesses. So something's never happened to me before in the course of, I'm a frequent traveler. We came into a certain city and I wanted to reach for my cell phone to let the person know who was going to pick me up that we come. But I couldn't reach. My seatbelt was fastened. So I loosened. I was on the aisle seat. The buckle went down. And reaching for my cell phone and got the bag, and it's on my lap, and the laptop was on top of the bag, so top laptop. The stewardess came zooming over and Goddess Durga or something. She started, animatedly raising her voice. Fasten your seatbelt. Put that stuff on the floor. So I'm like, and because I didn't immediately, jump when she said jump. She said, I'm telling you, it's just like her voice went up some decibels. I'm telling you, this is FAA regulation. We haven't come to the jetway. Put on your seatbelt. Put those things on the floor. Mother instructing her kid or something. I'm in my dhoti and, senior citizen. It just said that there's a fellow sitting right next to me, and I said, I'll certainly do that. Can you please just calm down? And she said something else again. I don't remember what that something else was, and said, I'm going to tell the pilot. I'm going right now. I'm going to inform the pilot. You're disobeying because... And it stayed with me for, I was thinking, I'm a frequent flyer. I think the Southwest people should know that they have an employee that just loses it. They can do something to help this lady. Maybe she had a problem in her home, or who knows what it was that caused her to do that. I was disturbed. And then, but I didn't do anything because I was too busy to write a letter of complaint. I'd never written a letter of complaint. I've written letters of appreciation. You have some really excellent people here. I didn't. It just stayed with me. And then, in my mind, I had composed a letter multiple times, but I never wrote anything because I didn't have time. Then I was realizing that actually it was good for me. I mean, it wasn't necessarily good for the airlines, but it was good for me. It's like, who are you anyways? Kind of thing. It's just humble. Could just deflate the sense of, I'm a priest, I'm a senior citizen, and I'm a frequent flyer, and I'm an A-list person for 15 years. Look at my record. Here's my, and this has never happened to me before. And, check this. Put a leash on this lady. Tell her to bark softer or something. But, I don't know if that would have done any good anyways. But in any case, it was some appreciation. It was good. Because behind that, whatever the reason was, I'm owning the responsibility for whatever it was that caused that to happen. And as soon as that entered my heart instead of this other stuff, it was much more peaceful. And who knows, maybe this is Krishna's arrangement so that when we're moving towards the jetway, I've got my seatbelt fastened from now on instead of, reaching for my cell phone because I can't do that with my seatbelt on, just like, who knows what Krishna's intention may be for the welfare of his devotee or something. Who knows? At least internally, the internal cultivation is, you know, I take responsibility for what treatment I receive from this lady, not just blame her for the treatment or the airlines. Anyway, you get the idea. If some bitter medicine comes our way, there's some mercy of Krishna behind it. You know, the culture these days, you know, if you see something, say something. So I was going to say something, because that's what you're supposed to do. And no harm if I said something, but if I'm going to say something, let it be from the right mood, not the wrong mood. If you're going to take some action about something that's a conflict situation for you, do it in the right mood. Calamities are going to come, favorable and unfavorable things are going to come, and it's unfavorably 10 minutes to 10 already. Okay, so I'm going to end and see if there's any comments or questions. Way in the back, you have a comment or a question? Do we have a portable microphone?
Hare Krishna. I have two questions. You said that one of the offenses towards the holy name is to consider something that's transcendental to be material.
Yeah.
I was thinking more in the context of relationship with one's spiritual master. In the beginning stage of my Krishna consciousness, I did doubt the instructions that would come, to trust them and to trust that it's coming from Krishna through the spiritual master. The gross level of the doubt has been kind of addressed, but there is still sometimes a lingering thought that just comes in a situation, and the thought comes, does Guru Maharaj know or understand? And then immediately I correct myself. How can one eradicate even that movement of the thought that comes in one's consciousness?
Well, discipline is a beginning part, but ultimately it's trust, and ultimately the trust goes to Krishna. The process of bhakti is by the agency of Krishna's internal potency, and there are various agents of Krishna's internal potency, not only spiritual master, but there's other agents of Krishna's internal potency, and I trust Krishna and his internal potency. So how do we get to that state? That requires purification and fundamental obstacle is our false ego. Then how are we going to invest trust in Krishna if I'm the best judge of everything? Now, if Krishna is the best judge of everything, like Prithu was saying, King Prithu, if something needs adjustment, Krishna will adjust it. Now that's not complete, because the representative of Krishna is or is not the representative of Krishna. But if there's trust in Krishna, if there's some need for adjustment, Krishna will adjust, and it's the infallible Supreme Lord will adjust. whatever needs, if there's needing. Or maybe like this example, if the airline stewardess, she's not spiritual master, but you know, some agent of some instrument of Krishna, there's a purpose behind that. What do you think?
Yes.
And through experience, also that the trust in the spiritual master can be nourished just by, you know, practical experience, as you know, the discussion has shown you over time. Okay.
Thank you. The second question is that yesterday's exercise that we did, and today's class also, you said like while chanting, not getting distracted by all the things that multitasking.
Mm.
That for a, to a very large extent, I'm able to kind of not get distracted. And it's easy to call out to Nam Prabhu saying, I want to be in a relationship with you. Please accept me. But the challenge at this phase is more of the physical, the body, like when you're so focused, the physical challenges that you have, like, you know, the pain and whatever, that kind of gets elevated, like it comes in the forefront. And how can one not get distracted, oh, this is hurting and that's hurting and...
First of all, if the preliminary part of not getting distracted, congratulations, that's a great achievement. And the pain part, it's similar. It's tolerance. It goes in sequence. Tolerate because it's duality. It's arising for sense perception. It's not me. You tolerate, and then place your consciousness in sat instead of asat. The temporary covering doesn't make the pain go away, but it withdraw consciousness from the pain and place it in sat. So it's challenging, but that's the instruction that Krishna gives. And then further advancement is actually experiencing a higher taste, so this other fades in its importance, even. Yeah, entering into one's consciousness, one may be aware, like Prabhupada, he was aware of, for example, you know, an abscessed tooth, or his kidney problem, or some different examples. But his consciousness was so much absorbed in Krishna that it just faded into insignificance. And then at some other stage, a very, very high stage, one isn't even noticing. But so the initial is tolerate and become absorbed in transcendence, absorbed in relationship with Krishna, the activities in relationship with Krishna. I would assume as If pain is there when you're sitting chanting, pain is there when you're doing other service, but you're doing the other service so the mind is absorbed in the other service and it takes your mind off the pain. And then you stop and then, oh, it pains. So the absorption in the holy name as the essence minus other physical activity, it's the absorption of the mind and absorption of the soul in the relationship with Krishna. As the sat feature as opposed to the temporary. That's the beginning. Okay. Yeah. Mahamantra.
Hare Krishna. If I'm able to keep good association, sadhana, preaching, service, then my question is it adverse to my making spiritual advancement if I intensely absorb myself in my occupational work and occasionally have to be aggressive to do it or even a combative?
He's a lawyer. It's no. If you know, two things. We have our nature and we can't just like suppress or deny the existence of our nature. So acting according to your nature is one thing. But you know, the higher position is to do something. If that's required, then you do that in a mood of I'm doing this for Krishna. Now, how to see the connection of occupation with Krishna is a whole other topic. I mean, it's part of your question. But the short answer is that can be used in Krishna's service, as your whole occupation can be an expression of service to Krishna.
Guru Maharaj,
I'm listening.
When I identify a upadhi while chanting, and is it okay to stop chanting and pray to Krishna to remove that upadhi and then continue, or while chanting simultaneously pray?
I'm resisting to answer your question directly because the frame of the question is a little confusing. It's not like we park our devotional service and pray. Just prayer is part of devotional service. And if you're, let's say, like this lady is out there, you know, mopping the floor. So supposing we're doing some service, we're mopping the floor. We can pray while we're mopping the floor.
Yeah.
And the mood of chanting can also similarly be while chanting. There's a mood. It's not necessarily your attention is going away from the holy name while you're chanting, so you have to stop chanting and then pray and then go back to chanting. It's a mood. Prayer is a mood of submission and supplication and appeal. So, in a particular direction, so they're simultaneous. They can easily be simultaneous. You certainly can stop, read some standard prayers or meditate on some standard prayers or some personal prayer or something like that, and then resume chanting. But, you know, in that mood, because again, the prayerful mood will continue. If you've entered into the mood of the prayer nicely.
Thank you.
Okay. Looks like we're okay. Last question, then we'll stop. Sorry to keep you so long. I got carried away.
Maharaj, you mentioned that the impersonalists also go beyond the material distinctions and the personalists. You made a comparison that the personalists go beyond the designations. So both has to go past that level. So my question is, so the personalists still have this distinctions in the conception.
My understanding is it's just suppressed, fastened down with nuts and bolts. But it's still there. It's not... in the language of the Bhagavatam. They think themselves liberated, but actually it's still there. The seeds are still there. The seeds are not cleansed away. It's still there. It's just not active. Dormant. Locked up. suppressed.
So in reality, there is only one way to get out of the distinction.
There's a glimpse of the impersonal feature, for there is such a thing as Brahman realization. From that Brahman realization, will one again fall? That's the message of the Bhagavatam. Because still there's a desire for activity. Still there's a desire for relationship, a desire for love, a desire for desire. It's just suspended or put in abeyance for some time. That's all.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.